From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. McDonald's grew from a single hamburger stand in San Bernardino, California, to 36,000 restaurants around the world with almost 2 million employees. How much do you know about the man who built that empire? The new film, The Founder, explores Ray Kroc's savvy and drive, and the acrimonious breakdown of his partnership with the McDonald brothers, who came up with the famous fast food model. This hour on Point, we'll talk with John Lee Hancock, director of The Founder, and look at its portrayal of the light and dark of 20th century capitalism and the dreams of Ray Kroc. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Have you seen The Founder? Do you know the story of the creation of McDonald's? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from Burbank, California, is John Lee Hancock, the director of The Founder. It's not his first foray into stories of larger-than-life American icons. He directed Saving Mr. Banks, about Walt Disney's quest to produce Mary Poppins. He also directed the film adaptation of The Blind Side, the sports biography based on Michael Lewis's book about NFL player Michael Orr. John Lee Hancock, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So is this your thing, American business greats, or have you just happened to come on two good stories here with Walt Disney and Ray Kroc?
I think the latter. It's just good stories and complicated characters are interesting, but it is kind of funny. Looking back at it, I certainly didn't plan this.
What drew you to the McDonald's creation story? I mean, we've all heard snippets and bits of it, but you really go deep here. What got you engaged with it?
Well, first I have to give credit to Rob Siegel's script, because that's how I became aware of the project. And I knew just a little bit about McDonald's history, not nearly as much as was in the script. And so when I read it, I was fascinated by it.
And Ray Kroc at the heart of it. Introduce us to Ray Kroc at the moment in his life where the film finds him, where it begins. He's not exactly a billionaire success story.
No, he's been a lifelong salesman and with various different products, and he has a multi-mixer, a milkshake machine that he's trucking around and
where you can make like four or five, six milkshakes at one time.
Yes, exactly.
He's got the trunk of his old car.
Yes, it's that's his it's Sisyphus and the rock, and that's his rock. And he has had his best years in selling them are behind him, and so sales have been on the wane a bit when we find him. And he's in his 50s, in the 1950s, at a time that's very different than being your 50s now, in that all his friends were looking for retirement and a soft spot to land, and he had yet to ring the bell and thought he was owed, probably.
There's a scene in the film where he gets an order first depict. He's having trouble selling a single milkshake maker or multi-milkshake maker, but an order comes in from California. I think he's driving around Missouri in his old Chevy, whatever it is, Ford.
Yes.
And an order for six of these comes in from way out in San Bernardino, California, and he just doesn't even believe it's true that anybody would need six multi-milkshake makers in one restaurant.
Right. As he says, who needs to make 30 milkshakes at a time?
Yeah. But there's a reason. And when he comes to understand that it's for real, is it historical fact that he just hops in his car and drives all the way from the Midwest to San Bernardino, California to check it out?
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how that came about. But in short order, he did make a trip, a visit out to see it for himself.
And here's a scene from the film, The Founder. Ray Kroc, played wonderfully by Michael Keaton, tells the brothers Dick and Mac McDonald how impressed he is with their operation.
This is the most remarkable restaurant I've seen in all my years in the food service industry, and I've seen it all. I want to hear your story.
And we all get the story. I mean, it's a story in the film. It's a film really about capitalism. It's a film about Ray Kroc and his ambition. It's about different kinds of founders. Your title's almost ironic because he was the founder, but another way he wasn't, John.
True. You could put a question mark at the end of the title. It might be even more appropriate, because it comes down to what is your definition of founders? Is it the person that creates something or the person that expands something?
I mean, he came in and ultimately pretty brutally shoved them out, but it was a real kind of partnership at the beginning. What was it that he saw when he showed up? I mean, in the film, you show him stopping at all kinds of drive-ins as he's trying to sell his milkshake makers, and they have a very different look from McDonald's. They've got a lot of them. They're bringing service out to the car. They've got waiters or waitresses on roller skates and all that. What was it that he saw in McDonald's that was different, John?
His mind was blown when he saw it. I mean, it's hard for us today to imagine how different McDonald's was at that time as compared to its competitors. But they had created fast food, and it was something that did not exist before that. I can't even imagine – I can't come up with a great example of what it would mean, but it's being thrust 30 years into the future with technology or something. Imagine somebody – you know, working on an abacus and then coming across an Apple computer and going, I have no idea what I'm looking at, but this is amazing.
These were brothers also out of the Midwest. They'd come to California looking for Hollywood careers that didn't work out. They'd had a movie house, a cinema that had folded in 1929. And eventually they got very creative. Dick is the kind of technical master here. And you wonderfully depict him envisioning in his mind a way to push a lot more burgers out the window real quick.
Yes. Dick was kind of an engineering genius, and Mac was more of the front of the store guy, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies and all that. But they completely refined several different restaurants to move toward what they thought was the future. They felt like every idea they had, they had just been right in the middle of the wave as opposed to being in the front of it. And so they decided that they would shut down their business and close it for 6 months and retool and come up with a brand new one that was futuristic.
What was the difference between their little McDonald's, they're not so little, I guess, it got busy anyway, in San Bernardino, mm-hmm. and the standard format at that time for burger and fries and Coke, whatever you wanted?
Well, mostly it was drive-ins and car hops, or you'd have just a restaurant that was a sit-down place. Mm-hmm. The idea that there would be no utensils, no plates, no silverware, and that the food would be
radical.
Wrapped in paper. Mm-hmm. It blew people's minds. And in the scene, you know, Michael comes up to the window and essentially gets his order in seconds, and he says, "This is impossible. I just ordered." And he asked, "Where do I eat it?" And it's a funny scene, but it's very true.
He ends up just sitting on a bench. A family shoves in next to him. He's never eaten out of a paper wrapper before. Many Americans had not. And the back of the operation, kitchen works. What was the difference there, John?
Well, I think just how automated. I mean, they probably took a page from Henry Ford. But just, I think this is also the time of automats and things like that, where you'd say, "I see that lemon meringue pie, and I'm going to put a nickel in, and then I have it." We were post World War II, mm-hmm. and felt like we had won the war, and we deserve it, and we deserve it now. And so, highways were being built. Everybody wanted things faster. And I think when Dick drew out the model on a tennis court and effectively created a dance for his employees to do so they wouldn't run into each other and effectively push food out the window.
Yeah, kind of choreography. He's got all of his guys out on the tennis court. He's marking, "You'll be here, you'll be here. The burgers will come here. You'll hand them off this way. Two pickles on each one." They even invented the sort of mustard and ketchup guns that put just a fixed amount on each burger patty as they go by.
They did indeed.
Here's Ray Kroc talking with his wife in the film, Michael Keaton, and the wife played by Laura Dern. And talking about his initial excitement about what he saw on this kind of assembly line McDonald's hamburger production.
Yeah, tell me, it's like something sprung from the mind of Henry Ford or something.
It's revolutionary?
It's revolutionary. It's exactly what it is. It's revolutionary.
And you want to invest in it?
I don't know. I'm not sure yet, but I just know I want to be part of it.
You hear the skepticism from Laura Dern right there. She'd been around this track before. This was not the first roller derby of investment or a sort of a big idea by Ray Kroc in his 50s there, John.
Their relationship was probably a little like Lucy and Charlie Brown in the football. And every time he would put it down, she would get faked out and she'd pull it away. He'd pull it away.
So it's going to be great, honey, and then it wouldn't work out and they'd all pay the price.
Yes, he had several different ideas, including one was the fold-a-nook Another was wax paper cups, different things that he had sold through the years, and everyone was going to be the one that made their life much better, and he would retire.
Fold a nook. That was like a fold-up bed for the kitchen or something like that?
It was, yeah, it was actually one in the film. I mean, it's not pointed out, but when they're sitting at the table in the scene you just played, mm-hmm. that's a fold a nook. It was kind of, as is said, a Murphy bed for your kitchen. and so it was just a table that would fold up against the wall, and then you could bring it down. And so it was especially effective in small kitchens. Actually, pretty good idea. I wish I had a fold a nook.
So is this film a celebration of Ray Kroc, or is it it's not an evisceration of Ray Kroc, but it certainly looks at, in his evolution, it goes from his excitement to someplace darker in time, though not entirely dark. What's the characterization?
Well, the thing that fascinated me when I read the script and what I wanted to accomplish with the film was that I felt I was actively rooting for him at the start of the movie. It's kind of in a Willy Loman kind of way. Mm-hmm. And then things start to happen that you're not quite sure about. And by the end, you may be, you know, aghast at some of the things he's doing. And I just felt kind of complicit in his rise to power in some ways, if that makes any sense, mm-hmm. and felt a little oily because of it. But I just found him fascinating, and I wanted to be a fair portrayal. But I like the fact that I was conflicted about what I felt about Ray Kroc. I thought the two boring versions of this movie, one would be lifting Ray Kroc up as the hero, and the other would be painting him as a villain. This was the one I wanted to make, and we did.
It's something more subtle in John Lee Hancock's new film, The Founder. He talks about Ray Kroc's story in his portrayal being like Death of a Salesman, but with a different ending. Willy Loman, in the form of Ray Kroc, does not commit suicide. Instead, as chairman of McDonald's, he takes over the world. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour about the new film, The Founder, about the creation of McDonald's, the hamburger giant, and the story of its driving force, Ray Kroc. The director of The Founder, John Lee Hancock, is with us from Burbank, California. He also directed Saving Mr. Banks and The Blind Side. You can see a trailer for The Founder at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us this hour. Where are your sympathies in this story? Who do you identify with? The brothers who say a better, faster way, they find it? Or the guy who took it global, made it huge? And is this just the way it goes? The hungry shark takes it away from the earnest dreamers. Is that the strength of capitalism? Is that the shadow of capitalism? Who's the hero here? Here's Michael Keaton in The Founder talking with the McDonald brothers about what they need to do next.
When I saw these lines in your whole operation and I tasted your product, I knew what needed to happen. Franchise. Franchise, 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 franchise.
Yes, and they would. Franchise like crazy. He painted the vision of McDonald's in kind of, super big terms. Here he is trying to pull them in, Dick and Mac McDonald, into his grandiose vision of what McDonald's would become in American culture.
It's a place where Americans come together to break bread. I am telling you, McDonald's can be the new American church. Feeding bodies and feeding souls, and it ain't just open on Sundays, boys. It's open 7 days a week.
The new American church, 7 days a week. Listeners writing in, John, and one corrects me. I did misspeak there. Of course, the McDonald brothers were not from the Midwest. They were from New Hampshire. Manchester, New Hampshire, Michael reminds us. Graduates of West High School there. And out they went. A lot of callers for you as well, John. Tom in Burlington, Wisconsin. Tom, you're on the air.
The McDonald's stock is a very interesting thing. He would give out stock, and they didn't give they didn't give dividends for many, many years, and Microsoft has done the same thing in their financing. But I'm from Burlington, Wisconsin, and we had Horlicks malted milk here, and Ray Kroc used to sell malted milk machines. I think there were five of them in a row. And he went into the George Petrie's place. He said, "George, you've only got one single one here. Get rid of this thing." And he took the single malt milkshake thing and put his five
multi-mixer there. Yeah.
And said, you're going to use this now. And then when I was going to school in high school, the very first McDonald's was in Glenview, Illinois. And we used to go over there and have hamburgers over there, these cheap little hamburgers. But then the thing that amazed me about the most about Ray Kroc was he was a man who was in one business and he jumped into another one. And I think a lot of Americans, a lot of people, if you learn different things in the business that you're in, and there's opportunities there, and you can jump into them. But my question to you, Mr. Director, is how did you pitch this when you were pitching it to the film people? And did you work on the fact that they had Jobs was a biographical kind of thing? Is that how you pitched it also?
What, in the line of the Steve Jobs biopics and more? How about it, John Lee? Were they wide open?
Yeah, I didn't really have to pitch it. By the time it came to me in script form, Film Nation and the Combine were already involved and were committed to making the movie. So it didn't fall on me to pitch the idea. They were already going to make it. But I'm sure that there have been several of these business-type movies, and I think when you're talking about strong branding and the iconography of McDonald's or Apple or Facebook, the behind-the-scenes story, origin story, is always kind of interesting.
Are you surprised by the story out of Wisconsin of Ray Kroc coming in and just taking away the old single milk shake maker and saying, you're going to use this six shake drive?
It sounds just like Ray to me.
It does. Krieger writes to us, of course, the hamburgers were 15 cents when this all began. One of our listeners writes, the earliest I remember McDonald's was like maybe 1966. Burger, cheeseburger, the fish thing, fries, apple pie, shakes, soda. That was the entire menu. I don't think any item was over 25 cents. No inside seating. And that's just the way it was. Of course, NPR listeners will know that, and we learn about this in the film too, that Joan Kroc, who was his wife at the time of his death, herself became a major philanthropist. She gave a lot to the Salvation Army. She gave $200 million to NPR. And, of course, we are all aware of that. You get into the story of how their relationship developed as well. But it's the relationship between Ray Kroc and the brothers McDonald, which is really at the heart of this thing. And he pushed them to franchise and franchise. They were not sure they wanted to do it. Nick Offerman is just incredible as Dick, the sort of engineer here and quality control guy who doesn't want to go that way. But he finally talked them into it, and they lived to deeply regret it. Describe some of the evolution of their relationship.
Well, I think he probably played to their egos a little bit. And as much as they wanted to maintain quality control, and they'd had a brief time period where they had tried to franchise, and they had five other restaurants in California and Arizona.
And the franchisees, they say, kept introducing fried chicken and stuff they didn't want in there.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think as Max says in the film, it's better to have one great restaurant than 50 mediocre ones.
But they did get a contract, a first contract signed, and what did it say, and what problems did that raise?
Well, I think Ray was so enthusiastic and so ready to get to work that he didn't. They negotiated a good deal for themselves, and so they were in the same bed with Ray in terms of when the flow would come to them in terms of profits, but they didn't want to screw the franchisees out of money. And so they had a very limited amount for themselves and a very limited amount that would go to Ray Kroc. And I think after a while, Ray realized that he didn't have sufficient cash flow to grow as exponentially as he wanted. And so he wanted to renegotiate, and they refused.
And he found a way out of the trap because they had control over what went on in the restaurants. But he became, in effect, a real estate landlord to the restaurants, and that's where he found his leverage.
And it was just all an effort to create cash flow. And it started with Harry Sonneborn, who gave him the idea to either own or lease the land and then lease it to the franchisee so that money's coming in when the first steak hits the ground.
And with that little flip, Ray Kroc gets the upper hand over the original McDonald's brothers. Here's a scene from The Founder. And Ray Kroc's early business partner, Harry Sonneborn, as you say, played by B.J. Novak, tells Kroc, Michael Keaton, he doesn't realize he's actually in the real estate business, not the hamburger business.
You don't build an empire off a 1.4% cut of a 15-cent hamburger. You build it by owning the land upon which that burger is cooked. What you ought to be doing is buying up plots of land, then turning around and leasing said plots to franchisees, who, as a condition of their deal, should be permitted to lease from you and you alone.
And he goes on, this is B.J. Novak playing the Harry Sonneborn character, that in this way, Ray Kroc will get leverage, will get the upper hand over the McDonald's brothers. And Kroc begins to take this on board.
Land. That's where the money is. And more than that, control. Control over the franchisee. Fail to uphold quality standards, you cancel their lease. Control over Dick and Mac. End result, you'll have the banks and the franchisees in the palm of your hand.
If I were to do this, the brothers, they effectively would be...
Yes.
Well, sort of crushed. They got some money out of it, but not the control that they expected. David in Hartford, Connecticut, you're on with John Lee Hancock, director of The Founder. Hi, David.
Hey, Tom, how are you? Love your show.
Thank you. What do you think?
So listen, I graduated from Elgin High School, Elgin, Illinois, in 1962, and sometime probably in 61, my friends and I from the high school went out for lunch. We'd usually have gone to the A&W to get hamburger and a black cow, and somebody said there's this new place in town. I'm pretty sure it was the second McDonald's after Glenview. I'm not positive about that, but we said, oh, there's this new place with cheap hamburgers. We went over, and I remember getting a hamburger, a milkshake, and French fries, and I think it was 30 cents.
For the whole thing.
For the whole thing, 15 cents for the hamburger, 10 cents for the shake, and I think 5 cents for the fries. I could be off by a nickel or something,
yeah.
But, you know, who could remember that stuff all? But I remember my friends and I thinking, this is the greatest thing. Wow. And we went there every day for lunch with one guy in our group who had a car.
Yeah. You were at ground zero, really, for the McDonald's expansion. Wasn't he, John Lee Hancock? I mean, Ray Kroc was out of Arlington Heights, Illinois. The first one, I think, was at Des Plaines.
Yeah, on Lee Street, is my understanding. But yeah, he...
That is the first opened... of his. He later would claim that was the first one. That was part of his kind of subterfuge here.
Yes, he called it McDonald's number one, kind of conveniently forgetting that there were
San
five
Bernardino,
or six prior.
Yeah, and more. But there David was right at the beginning. David, I appreciate that memory from right at the start. Phil in Hebron, Illinois. Phil, you're on the air.
I wrote a lot about Ray Kroc, and I've heard a story, and I know for a fact he didn't deny the story. It was in one of the books I read that he, it sounds like you covered this in your film, he really didn't have any good relationship with the McDonald brothers, and when he finally got control of the last original store that they held, he personally went to the site and drove the bulldozer through the store, and he said, I hate those guys. Do you know that story?
It's actually sort of portrayed in the movie. What happened in reality was they wanted to keep their original store even though they had sold the naming rights. And they wanted to give it to their longtime employees as a gift. And that upset Ray because he felt like it was an end run in terms of the contract negotiations. So he couldn't have that original San Bernardino store. So he opened one a McDonald's across the street and ran them out of business.
Yeah, and out they went, and it did not end up well. And just two different visions of how what business is. They had this kind of small town integrity. They wanted everything just right. Being masters of the universe was not their dream. Ray Kroc saw it in a different way, and he wasn't afraid ultimately to just lay it down with them. Here's some of that exchange.
Business is war. It's dog eat dog, rat eat rat. If my competitor were drowning, I'd walk over and I'd put a hose right in his mouth. Can you say the same?
I can't. Nor would I want to.
Hence your single location.
There. Fast food drama, but really more than that. I mean, it goes to the heart of a kind of, fork in the road in American business, American capitalism. Ray Kroc, if my competitor were drowning, I'd walk over and I'd put a hose right in his mouth. John Lee Hancock, director of The Founder, is with us from Burbank, California. Logan Albright is with us as well right now, researcher, writer for Conservative Review. He's seen the film and written about it. Logan Albright, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what did you see in The Founder? Hollywood can often come out, you know, and paint business in with a very, very dark brush, and sometimes it well deserves that. What about in The Founder?
Well, I'd like to start by saying that I really enjoyed the film. I thought it was an excellent portrayal of complex characters. As Mr. Hancock says, you feel conflicted about Ray. He starts off the film with a lot of very admirable qualities. Persistence is a key theme in the movie, which is important. And then towards the end, he becomes a bit of a villain. But I think I like that complex scenario. I like those complex characterizations where you don't. There's not the guy in the white hat and the guy in the black hat. I think the film ultimately comes down on the side of very pro-capitalism, I think. I described the film in my review as pro-McDonald's and anti-Ray Kroc. But the heart and soul of capitalism is the entrepreneur, the person who has the ability to see a flaw in a current system, see an opening for something new, and then exploit that to create something. And you see that in the McDonald brothers, who saw a problem with the current model of fast food – or not fast food, but drive-in restaurants or sit-down restaurants. It created a new business model. You see it also in Ray Kroc, who saw an opportunity to expand a single restaurant into an empire.
So they're both entrepreneurs? I mean, but they're very different kinds of entrepreneurs, right? I mean, Ray wants the empire. The brothers want their, you know, manageable environment of top quality.
They're different kinds in terms of temperament, but I think they both contribute something of value. The brothers contribute the original idea, but they lacked the vision to be able to expand it into a nationwide or worldwide chain that created what McDonald's is today. And that's a valuable contribution and a vision that Ray Kroc had that they wouldn't have had without him. And I don't think any of that excuses some of the unethical behavior he engages in. But it is worth pointing out that that kind of entrepreneurship is what makes capitalism run.
I mean, all of this comes even before we talk about whether the diet that McDonald's brought to so many Americans is a good one. And there's been, of course, you know, Fast Food Nation and all the rest. They've been really hit hard with criticisms of that. But John Lee Hancock, just in terms of two different brands or styles of entrepreneur there, where did your sympathies lie? When you look at Ray Kroc, you know, just this drive to go big, 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 and the brothers, this drive to get it right and maybe keep it small. Where'd you come down, John?
Well, and I think as a storyteller, you want to ask good questions. You don't necessarily have to answer them.
True.
And I think when you both the McDonald's brothers and Ray Kroc represent capitalism. I mean, let's not forget that the McDonald's brothers were after a bottom line as well.
Sure.
They just had a philosophical difference with Ray probably. But I think Logan's correct in saying, you know, there's value in both, and neither one would have happened without the other.
When Ray Kroc went out to find his first franchisees, he first went to kind of the country club set, and he ended up not really liking the way as you depicted anyway, the way they handled it, because they didn't want to get their hands dirty. And then he targeted a different demographic, a different profile for his franchisees. How would you describe it, John Lee?
Well, I think it's really admirable of Kroc. I mean, it's one of those times you're really pulling for him, I think, because he realizes it's not about fat cats who want to park money. It's about people that are willing to roll up their sleeves and do the work, because that's very much who Ray Kroc was as well. He was described by anybody who was around him as the hardest working person they'd ever met. So, you know, he took it to the streets in a way and said, you know, I want to have that that husband and wife working together, and this is, you know, their main asset, and they're there because they have to be there, and they want to be there, and they want it to be good.
And so this was like veterans and just young couples who didn't have a lot, but they were willing to be in that restaurant alongside the cook staff and getting it done and keeping it right to formula.
Yeah, he learned the lessons that the McDonald's brothers had already described to him in their failures in franchising originally, and so he had to relearn those same lessons.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the new film, The Founder, about the creation of McDonald's, the hamburger giant, and the story of its driving force, Ray Kroc. Director of the film, John Lee Hancock, is with us. Also directed Saving Mr. Banks and The Blind Side. Logan Albright's here from Conservative Review. He's written about The Founder and its view of American capitalism. Here's a little bit from the film, The Founder. It's kind of a montage of sales pitches from McDonald's head, Ray Kroc. And this is when he's sort of begun to take the reins away from the McDonald's brothers. He's played by Michael Keaton, of course. And he's out recruiting here, not the country club set, but a sort of Main Street folks, to be new franchisees. This is in the early days of McDonald's. He's selling the whole idea.
At McDonald's, it's like this great nation of ours.
I
guarantee you,
if you've got the guts and the gumption,
you've got the desire,
I guarantee you,
you can succeed.
There's gold to be had at the end of those golden arches.
Golden arches.
Who wants to jump on that ladder to success?
Become part of the McDonald's Schmucker.
Now's with me. Come on, let me see some hands.
Who's with me? Who's with me? And in they came. Janet in Baltimore. Janet, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
And how timely you just played that, because in the movie, Ray Kroc was talking to a group of everyday Americans, including what I thought I saw was some African Americans, or at least people of color.
Yes, I noticed the same thing, Janet.
Did you? Yes. And I am a person of a woman of color. I'm African American.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I grew up in Washington, D.C., middle class mm-hmm. neighborhood. And we did indeed have a McDonald's. I'm a baby boomer, so
yep.
I remember it well.
Yep.
Did Ray Kroc really reach out to all people of color? Because that's fairly admirable for somebody during that time. I remember our first McDonald's around 63.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious if that was true. And I do remember my father being interested in a McDonald's franchise maybe when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
So just if you could speak to that. Or
we'll go there to that, Janet. I appreciate your call. I mean, everybody looking for a way up, a way to make it. John Lee Hancock, you're the director, so it's not accidental that you had African-Americans showing up in those crowds and among those that Ray Kroc was talking with about becoming franchisees. Is that a historical fact?
I don't know for sure. I haven't seen the list of the original Kroc franchisees and what their backgrounds were.
So that's artistic license. You're giving a certain picture of what went on. Janet noticed it. So did I. I thought, that's interesting.
Well, I think it belongs there not as any kind of message or anything, but because it's in keeping with Kroc's nature, which is I don't care. I want hardworking people. I want Americans who want to do the work. And it's in keeping with, I think, what his philosophy about moving forward was all about.
Yeah. Janet, we're going to have to do a little more homework to figure that one out. But I noticed the very same thing, and you hear how John Lee Hancock decided to go there. Adele in Milwaukee. Adele, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
I did see the movie. I loved it. I thought it was great. And I really had a different perspective on the heartbreaking part of the brothers, and that really they did themselves in. Everything that he wanted to do with his vision, they just stymied him. They told him no. And they could have shared in his success if they had just had the same vision. I started a business and made it better than the model that we took it from and was successful. And so that's America.
But Adele, you put your finger right on where the tension is here in a way. He came and wanted to put Coca-Cola ads on the menus. They said, no, that's crass commercialism. Joan, who becomes Joan Kroc, his wife after a divorce or two, I think, historically, suggests that they're spending too much money on refrigeration and they should use instant milkshake mixes without the ice cream. The McDonald brothers hate that. They don't want to have milkshakes without actual milk and ice cream in them. What about sticking up for that kind of quality and saying no to the branding everywhere, Adele?
It just didn't work. He saw what he could go ahead with, and they eventually went back to the milk in their milkshake.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
He saw what he was going to be able to do, and they just were short-sighted. They couldn't see that, and they did themselves in. They ditched themselves.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because now here we are years later, and we're going to look at this before the hour's over, but McDonald's has had some tough times lately when, you know, restaurants that have gone back to more old-fashioned quality have done pretty well. But I love the scene where he's sitting with Joan. She's not his wife at this point. She's the wife of, what is it, a Minneapolis franchisee, John. And And Ray Kroc is infatuated with her. She's kind of a bombshell in the film. And she eventually becomes his third wife. But here's over dinner, the beautiful blonde Joan proposes that maybe he shouldn't bother with all that real ice cream for the milkshakes.
What if I told you there was a way all of your owner-operators could save literally hundreds of dollars a year in electrical costs and reduce the time that it takes to make a milkshake by half?
I'll bite.
Ray Kroc will bite on more than milkshakes there. Of course, Joan Kroc goes on to become a big benefactor to NPR. But John Lee Hancock, did she really get involved in sort of business suggestions about how McDonald's was run?
It's my understanding that she was very interested in the business, and they became kind of a partnership of sorts in terms of these ideas and what to do with the restaurant and how it should grow. I think as years went on, and he kind of moved away as well, and different people became the head of McDonald's, and he was still chairman, et cetera, that she probably got more involved in extracurricular activities and society work in both in Los Angeles and then eventually in San Diego.
You said that Ray Kroc embodies a kind of can-do American spirit, but that there's a dark side to that philosophy as well. How would you describe that tension, the sides of it?
Like Adele said, I mean, there's something to admire in the guy who has the better idea and is willing to work for it. And when it comes to Kroc asking Mac the question of, you know, if my competitor's drowning, I stick a hose down his throat, which is an actual Kroc quote. And would he be willing, Mac, be willing to say the same? And Mac says no, that he couldn't and wouldn't want to. And I think that's kind of the point of departure for me a little bit, because I understand, you know, that from a capitalist standpoint, that the need to take on your competition, have the better product. But then there's the Schadenfreude of it. I only succeed if you fail aspect, which for me personally, I don't think I'd want to stick a hose down anybody's throat. And so I'd probably end up being like Mac and Dick. And
roadkill a little bit. Of course, they went away with big checks. Logan Albright, you see it ultimately as an endorsement, you see of capitalism, but not necessarily Ray Kroc. Tell us more.
Sure. I think your last caller had a really interesting point. And while I wouldn't say that Dick and Mac had it coming because of their unwillingness to bend, but it does show that Ray had drive and had ambition. And I think if you're going to criticize something in the movie, you could criticize the justice system that allowed Ray Kroc to get out of his contract and break out of that. But ultimately, I think what this shows is that you need a good product in order for capitalism to work, in order for entrepreneurship to work. They would not have been able to do any of this without the hamburgers that everyone loved.
They had a contract. He said, look, I'll bury you in legal costs. He promised them 1% of future earnings on a handshake. He broke that promise. They went away with checks for $1 million-plus apiece. But it's a tough story. They had integrity. Ray Kroc had vision or ferocity, and the story is told in John Lee Hancock's film, The Founder. Really interesting. I enjoyed it. John Lee Hancock, congratulations on it coming out, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Logan.
And Logan Albright at Conservative Review. Thanks so much for joining us, Logan.
Thank you, Tom.
In a moment, we will look at how McDonald's is faring today when fast food competition is tougher and maybe fast food is a little less popular. This is On Point. Consumers have more choice than ever today when it comes to dining out, especially among fast food options. With flat domestic growth in recent years, McDonald's has had to work hard to stay healthy. Joining me now from Chicago is Peter Frost. He covers the food industry for Crain's Chicago Business. Peter, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We all saw the headlines in recent years of McDonald's in trouble. How's it doing these days?
McDonald's is doing better these days than it was two or three years ago. The company, as you mentioned in the lead into this, there's been just a wave of more upscale competitors that have flooded into this system, all the way from burger chains like Five Guys and Shake Shack and Habit Burger, even down to chains like Chipotle, which have offered what consumers perceive as better food. And so McDonald's has really struggled running up into that new competition. But now they're starting to bounce back.
You know, here's a listener writing. Kathy says, what's really strange is this, the new movie that we've just been talking about, coming out at a time when McDonald's is in rapid decline. She writes, she says, if you go into one today, it's empty. A few old people getting cheap coffee. She's there with her daughter because they have a Hello Kitty toy in the Happy Meal.
Well, I don't think she's quite right there. It is true that foot traffic is down into McDonald's stores, especially in the U.S., and that's something that the chain is really working hard to try to reverse. And they've taken a lot of measures to try to combat that. For example, the biggest one is all-day breakfast. That's something that customers had asked for forever.
Mm-hmm.
And CEO Steve Easterbrook, who joined the company almost 2 years ago now as the CEO, has really, you know, sort of kicked these things into high gear. You know, franchisees said forever, oh, we can't do all-day breakfast. It's too complicated. Steve mm-hmm. Easterbrook says, sure you can. So they roll it out, and, you know, sales respond. You know, he's also intent on cleaning up the menu. They've removed a ton of items. They're cleaning up their McNuggets. They're taking out artificial flavors. They're rolling out antibiotic-free chicken. They're going to cage-free eggs. They're removing margarine on their McMuffins in favor of butter. So, you know, he sees the writing on the wall here that customers want better food, you know, food that's perceived as better for you and with no artificial ingredients. And they're really trying to press to step on the gas here to make that happen.
Wait, there aren't McNuggets anymore?
No. There are McNuggets, but they've taken artificial preservatives out of the McNuggets, which is a big deal. They're calling them clean McNuggets, and it's supposed to make parents, you know, more likely to feel better about buying them for their kids, for example.
That is interesting. And what about additions to the menu? There's breakfast all day. I mean, they've got salads and stuff now, but how wide does the health factor go here? You know, they took a lot of heat for sort of corrupting American eating habits and diets.
They sure did. And, you know, I think they realize that a burger, any way you slice it, is still going to be an indulgence. It's not exactly the best food in the world for
mm-hmm.
you. But what they're trying to do is take that burger and take the artificial ingredients out of it to simplify the recipes, make it taste better so you don't feel as bad about eating it.
What about their growth abroad? Are they growing abroad with the traditional menu, or are they making the same changes globally?
I think it's different by country at this point. Abroad, they are growing, particularly in a market like China, where there's a lot of room for McDonald's to grow. But one of the big things they're doing on the business side is they're refranchising these restaurants. So they're sort of walking away from the liability of building and maintaining these restaurants and selling them off to franchisees, which, you know, as you talked about earlier in this program, is, you know, Ray Kroc's big thing was franchising the restaurants.
Well, what does refranchising mean, Peter? I don't know.
Sure, no, I'm sorry. So, for example, McDonald's owns and operates a number of its own restaurants.
Oh.
That percentage is shrinking.
Huh.
So they're taking the restaurants that they own and operate, and they're selling them to franchisees who would then own and operate them on behalf of McDonald's and pay McDonald's franchise and royalty fees.
So going back to the original Ray Kroc formula.
Correct, particularly overseas. That's a big initiative of the company right now.
And in the U.S., I mean, one of the things you see in the film is, and of course anybody who was there remembers, it was a lot of teenage labor. It'd be part-time jobs for teenagers at McDonald's. That the age of their employees seems to have gone up a lot. Where does that stand now? And what about the minimum wage complaints that we've heard around the country when it comes to fast food? McDonald's very much included.
Oh, it's McDonald's is at the center of this, of course, because when you're the biggest elephant in the room, you're the one who gets all the attention, right? So they have more than 14,000 United States restaurants, and they've been at the center of this minimum wage fight. Fight for 15 and the rising labor costs are hurting McDonald's. There's no doubt about that. What are they doing? I know some workers appear to be older than they used to be. It's, you know, McDonald's, I think, still views these, you know, frontline restaurant jobs as not a full-time career, but more of a, you know, a stepping stone to something in the future. So, yeah, it's interesting. Minimum wage is hurting all these restaurant companies, and they're all trying to find ways to decrease their expenses. So McDonald's is putting kiosks in its restaurants so people can order from a menu board as opposed to walking up to a counter and talking to a person. And all this aims to cut labor costs.
Kiosks, you mean you don't even interact with someone behind the counter? You just punch in your own order and wait for it to come up on the counter?
That's right. And, you know, in addition to that, which is interesting, they're also adding labor. So when you order from a kiosk and you eat inside the restaurant, you take a number and sit down, and they're doing table service. So they'll bring your Big Mac and fries right to your table.
Is McDonald's long-term survival, you know, can we presume that? It's just so big that it's going to find a way to roll forward, or do restaurant stories like this peter out at some point?
That's a great question. I'm in the camp that believes that McDonald's has staying power, and I think the brand is big enough, and it is important and sort of intertwined in the history of, you know, modern day America, that I don't think the brand is going anywhere. I think if they continue to make steps to modernize themselves and to continue to evolve with consumers, I don't think the brand will go anywhere.
And Peter, what about Ray Kroc's fingerprints? Are they still on McDonald's today in 2017?
Well, I think so. I think so. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When you look at, you know, the company, you know, Ray Kroc was the king of franchising, right? Mm-hmm. And McDonald's is, you know, I don't know the exact figure. I think it's about 90% franchise, maybe a little bit more than that. And they're moving more in that direction. They're selling more of their restaurants to franchisees. And McDonald's is almost like a marketing and real estate company, to be honest. I mean, that's where they make their money.
Well, where's their stock price? Is it suggesting good things or what?
Stock price is pretty flat year over year. It's at $123 a share. It's way better than it was a couple of years ago, but over the last year, it's sort of been up and down.
McDonald's. Peter Frost writes about that and more for Crain's Chicago Business. Joins us today from Chicago. Peter, thanks a lot for being with us. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation to get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Halima Gikande, Brian Harzinski, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Maeve Pajess, Sarah Platt, Allison Poley, and James Ross. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.